I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. This episode of Pick Six is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. Sorry for the late start. Somebody couldn't find a hat. It's probably Sully or Breach.
What's Definitely. Up, fellas?
John Breach, Tyler Sullivan, how we doing?
What's going on?
Good.
Your hair looks great. Let me just say that right off the bat.
I'm going to be gone next week or parts of next week. And we'll be scuba diving. I was out trying to buy a new scuba mask. Freaking shop was closed. So I hauled my butt all the way over to Winston-Salem. Get to the dive shop. Dive shop's closed. Had to drive all the way back. By the time I got back here, I didn't have time to get my hair done properly for the podcast. But I did get to drive by. It's like near my where my parents live. There's like this. I don't know if I told this story before. I think it's podcast appropriate. But there's a. It's a little like I don't know if it's a community or like an incorporated township or something. But it's called Horny Town.
Okay.
And I drove by Horny Town, the Horny Town Country Store, and Horny Town Guns and Ammo.
Does this end with you being voted the mayor of Horny Town?
Nah, I'm the, yeah. The,
no, that's where you got it's where you got a scuba mask.
But it's actually, it's actually, there's this road, like when you get off of the little highway and then you pop on this road and it's Horny Town Road. But as long as I've been alive, I've never seen a street sign on Horny Town Road because what happened was that they would put them up and they wouldn't last like 30 minutes before some youth would come along and steal the sign. So finally, they just quit putting up signs. There are no signs on Horny Town Road. So that's my story for today.
Where are you going scuba diving? You buried the lead here. Grand Cayman? That sounds like a Brinson landing spot.
That is very close to where we're going. I'm not going to reveal exactly.
Oh, yeah. You know, we don't want listeners to stalk you like people do to Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. We don't need that situation on the podcast.
Right. I don't think that it's the same level of whatever.
It's Horny Town Scuba Center.
That's right. We're going diving in Horny Town. By the way, NC State still alive. Did we cover that early? I think we did.
We spent a whole
moving
Monday.
Along.
Yeah, we'll talk about it Monday when they're in the Final Four.
Dude, if they're in the Final Four,
you'll be in the Caribbean.
Then you'll actually be in Horny Town.
Oh, I will be in Horny. I'll be the president of Horny Town if NC State makes the Final Four. The biggest things we learn. From the owners' meetings, we talked about new rules. By the way, Sully, thanks for holding down the fort with Brady and Deuce on Tuesday. Great job filling in. I had mistakenly like calendared. It's spring break for Robbie, so I sort of messed up my timing on all of that. I appreciate it, Sully. Yeah, appreciate it. Breach, what's the biggest thing you learned from the owners' meetings?
Brenton, the biggest thing I learned is that the owners are suddenly open to these huge changes. I mean, this group is normally so conservative. They hate making big rule changes that really kind of change the philosophy of how you play the game, or a certain aspect of the game, as we saw with this kickoff rule. I mean, this is unprecedented. I was trying to think of the biggest rule changes we've seen probably in our lifetimes. I would say the two-point conversion would be one. Adding instant replay, bringing that back, which was in the late 90s, would be one. And maybe moving the extra point back. But again, the extra point rule, they made that a preseason rule for 2 years in 2014. And then they said, let's do it again in preseason 2015. And then we'll do it the trial during the regular season 2015. So they were like, we're not even going to move the extra point back until we have all this evidence that this makes sense. And with this kickoff rule, they just said, you know what? Screw it. We're just going to vote this thing through. We don't care what happens. We have no idea how this is going to play out. And we saw the Packers, 49ers, Raiders vote for it. And the Packers and 49ers both said that's why they voted against it, is because, hey, we'd like to see this maybe as a preseason trial first before we go jumping into the deep end. But nope, the owners, if the NFL wants a big change, Goodell proved he can push it through and convince the owners to do it with this vote this week.
Well, I'll kind of commend them for it too. For mine, and we'll get to it in a second, I'm kind of being a little bit more pessimistic, but for the sake of them changing this kickoff rule, I like that they're being so aggressive and I would say proactive to a degree. I mean, we're recording this on Thursday. It's MLB's opening day. Baseball was so slow to make certain changes, and it really drastically hurt the viewership and the overall enjoyment of baseball. And you've seen them kind of over recent years make the bases bigger, put in a pitch clock. They've tried to change.
I mean, the pitch clock is a game changer.
It's awesome, but it's also like 5 years too late.
Yes.
They should have done it so much earlier. And so we were talking about this on the most previous podcast, that the kickoff just became such a ceremonial nothing play where you're going to the bathroom, you're still getting your beer, you're grabbing your food, you're doing whatever, but paying attention to football. Now you actually need to go sit down because something could happen, or at least that's what they're hoping. It'll be a more meaningful play in a game. And so to me, I commend them for doing this and being proactive and being as aggressive as they are.
Yeah. I mean, I think you guys can both be right in this instance, where it is good by the NFL owners to be proactive, to make, like, the kickoff was worthless, you know, and these kickers have such strong legs. They're just booming out of the back of the end zone, or, you know, guys are waving, it's falling down. And I understand, like, you know, they also, you know, because they moved it up, they wanted to make it like safer. I mean, the kick returns are the most dangerous play in football, and that's why they changed them. It's where the most concussions were happening. It's where the biggest impacts were happening. And now you're just not going to have any impact in terms of the blockers. And I think we're minimal impact. And I think that's pretty, I think that's a, you know, it changes how these guys who are special teamers, like, you know, Matthew Slater just retired, right? I mean, like, you know, lifetime special teams guy, like a borderline Hall of Fame special teams guy. And it's going to change how these special teams guys maybe fit onto rosters, but it's also going to mean like less injuries for guys who are starters, who are, you know, playing special teams, because that's what you have to have with the NFL. I think to Breach's point, the fact that these owners are willing to do this so, or to your, maybe to both your points, the fact that they did this so aggressively and so like just, screw it, who knows what's going to happen, let's borrow this thing from the XFL. The first month of the season is going to be insane. Like, these guys don't, there's like, nobody knows what the edge is here in terms of the special teams. Like, even the coaches can't know until you actually see it enacted. There's going to be guys who have special returns built in. There's going to be guys who aren't, you know, like they're going to be idiot coaches who don't pay attention to the special teams as much as they should. I mean, there's going to be chaos for the first month. So well, I'm excited for that.
And part of that, though, is that obviously we're going to see this in the preseason, but I think that special team coaches are not going to want to give anything away. So
right. We're
just going to see the standard kick returns, which still it will spice it up because we're seeing the new kickoff in the preseason. But yeah, I don't think we're actually going to know how this plays out until we get to the regular season. Of course, the downside here is you can no longer use the kickoff as a bathroom break, which I did at Super Bowl 56 when the Bengals played the Rams, because I'm only bringing this up because this is your mindset. We had to do the post-game podcast. I was at the game with my family, and at the 2-minute warning, I knew I had to go to the bathroom and I wasn't going to be able to make it till the end of the podcast. We're talking, you know, between the end of the game, the podcast, it was probably 2 hours before I was going to get a shot. But as soon as the Rams scored a touchdown, I think there was like a minute 25 left. I was like, I don't need to see the kickoff because they're just going to kick it in the end zone. It's going to be a touchback. But I did risk that if it's not a touchback, you know, the Bengals might return it for a touchdown. I missed the game-winning score, and I will regret that for the rest of my life. But nope, my theory worked. Matt Gay kicked in the end zone for a touchback. I didn't miss anything, made it back. So you can't do that anymore because we're going to get returns now.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's also interesting from the perspective of how this is going to, what this means for kickers specifically, like guys who are able to really, you know, like, I mean, for lack of a better like analogy, it's sort of like how's your wedge game? You know, like, can you stuff wedges from 100 yards out into that landing zone and really force returners to make a decision? Because it's really creative and exciting, and I'm kind of excited for it.
Let me say one thing quick, Prince. Yeah. I was actually texting with my dad about the role, and
humble brag.
I think this is former NFL kicker. You got to talk about it. So one of the things though is that, look, NFL kickers are better than XFL kickers. So I think that's something that I don't know if the owners really thought that part of it through. So they're going to have better ball placement, as Brinson said, better wedge game. This is like PGA guys versus college golfers, what we're talking here. And so, you know, your plan, I think, as a special teams coach is to make sure the ball hits the ground, because that gives the coverage team an extra second or two, and maybe the returner has trouble fielding it. So I think the ultimate plan is going to be for the ball to somehow hit the ground, but where that happens is going to be up to each special teams coach.
So your big takeaway involves Jesus.
Yes, it does. It's Jesus's birthday. And sorry, Jesus, your birthday does not matter anymore. And sorry, NBA, your marquee day on the calendar does not matter anymore, because Christmas is forever going to be a marquee event on the NFL calendar. They said way back when, or, you know, last year or whatever, that they weren't going to do it. They weren't going to have a Christmas Day game, whether if it was in the middle of the week, only if it was a special circumstance or it landed on a football specific day. Well, Christmas is on a Wednesday this year, and guess what the NFL is doing? They're playing a game on a Wednesday. They're playing two games, actually, Brinson. You're right. They're playing two games. So not only are you getting one, you're getting a doubleheader. It just goes to show you that they found something here. They feel like this is a window for them to really get a lot of viewership, and rightfully so. It's going to be. But to me, you know, it's just going forward, we're working on Christmas, fellas. You know, I look at it selfishly. I'm like, hey, all right, we're working on Christmas. But yes, going forward, NFL Christmas, it's forever going to be a thing.
You know, I guess I can say this, but back. Well, I mean, it used to be, this is before Breach got here. We had, I would just say that the having a disparate number of religious beliefs on your NFL staff, your NFL writing staff, can be a bonus for you.
True.
Depending on the holiday that you're trying to discuss.
I guess that's true.
Yeah.
Brinson, all you're saying is not everyone celebrates Christmas, and some people don't mind working on Christmas.
That's what I'm saying, Breach. My mom is a retired minister. She is disgusted and appalled at the idea of football. I said, football. She's like, football is family. It's a load of crap. I'm like, well, I'm not wrong. And she's like, the idea of like football and Christmas just does not sit well with her at all. And I told my family last year, I was like, look, get used to it, because these ratings are so good. They love the idea of like football being associated with holidays. And this is shoving it right down Jesus's throat. I mean, I get that Jesus apparently bought a bunch of Super Bowl ads. Three of them, I believe. Like, you know, it's like, what's up with this budget, Jesus?
I guess we should have known, right?
Yeah, I mean, really, you pay. Yeah, I guess he's like, hey, I'm going to buy these three ads. You got to put these two games on my birthday. look, I think what's really disturbing about it is that the argument that Roger Goodell made for it was, well, it's just like playing on a Thursday. It's just like playing on a Sunday and then playing on a Thursday. Yeah, carpenters, but in this economy. And they're like, well, it's just like playing on a Saturday, because the two teams who play on Wednesday will play on a Saturday before that, right? They're going to play on the Saturday before Christmas. That's what they said. That's going to be the schedule. But it's like, just like, everybody agrees Thursday night football is forced. Like, what do you mean? It's just like a Thursday night football game. It's like, that doesn't make it better. You're forcing four teams to play on Christmas Day. And look, I mean, I get, you know, I don't know, man. I like the idea of Christmas and no football. I like the idea of watching football on Christmas. I don't like the idea of working on Christmas. It's just not a very appealing, especially when you have a young kid. And so selfishly, like, that part bothers me. But I also just, I don't know, man. I always kind of like the idea that you got some football on Christmas every couple of years, but for the most part, like, it was perfectly fine for the NFL to take Christmas off. And so that part kind of bugs me.
They are never taking Christmas off again. It's been five straight years. And if they're playing on Wednesday, they're going to play on any day that Christmas falls on. I will say, though, from the safety standpoint, and Brinson, you just mentioned the part how Goodell compared to play a Sunday, Thursday game. So it's definitely similar as far as the break goes. So however you feel about Thursday night football, you know, it's one thing, but it is the same break. But honestly, if I'm a team, I don't mind playing the Christmas game because now you get an 11-day break before week 18. If you clinch that wild card spot and you rest your starters in week 18, you literally get 18 days for your team to rest at the end of the season. So that's a break.
Is that too much, though?
Well, I mean, then you play your, I mean, maybe you're still playing for seed in week 18, but I'm saying the fact that if you're in a wild card battle and you even have that option, that's an option that usually only goes to winning the division. So I don't think it's the worst thing in the world for a team to be stuck playing this game, which would be in week 17. It'll be the first two games of week 17, in case anyone's wondering how that would work.
Yeah. They'll have a game on Thursday too.
Right. So I have it in front of me. This is Field Yates tweeted it out when it was all coming out. December 25th NFL game, December 26th NFL game, December 28th NFL game, December 29th NFL game, December 30th NFL game, and then the next 2 days college football playoffs. A lot of football.
Hey, look, I love football. Lots of football is always a good thing. I just, you know, it feels a little forced on a Wednesday, but here we are. That's how it's going to work. I'm trying to decide. We need to get to a break. So I was going to say my big takeaway is just that we're going to get four quarterbacks in the top 10 and that there are a lot of teams trying to trade down in this draft, and you're going to see a lot of action at 3, 4, and 5 in particular, I think. I don't know how we feel about the Pats, Sully, but I mean, I would expect that they're interested in trading down if they don't love the quarterback at 3, or do you think they'll stick for there?
I think it's generally lying season. I think they're taking a quarterback. I think they'll end up being born and sticking at 3.
Jim Harbaugh not making any bones about it. Like, that was my big Jim Harbaugh is like, all right, you know, like I tell you what, these guys, all these GMs, all these personnel guys, they love JJ McCarthy. And I mean, they really love him. It's like, Jim, you're at 5. Everyone knows you're trying to trade down. You're pumping up JJ McCarthy's value. I mean, that being said, maybe JJ McCarthy goes 2. I mean, that was the rumor that was out there. I think that we can have some real chaos after Caleb Williams goes. That's sort of my big takeaway, Breach.
Yeah. I mean, that feels like that's what Jim Harbaugh does want. I love the fact that he was just being the ultimate salesman out there, saying, JJ McCarthy's the best quarterback in the draft. Somebody call us and come up and trade up and get JJ McCarthy. He's trying to make sure that 4 quarterbacks go in the top 4 so that they have the first non-quarterback pick. Jim Harbaugh's brilliant.
Let me just ask you this real quick. Is this giving you any like Will Levis vibes from last year? Where, because the betting odds for Will Levis was like he was going number 2, he got skyrocketed the day of the draft, and then the dude fell to the second round. Is JJ McCarthy? I mean, obviously we think he's a better prospect than Will Levis, but is this kind of pumping of the tires similar in that regard of teams just kind of lying and boosting value?
No, but only because I think the way that things have lined up with the draft and with the quarterback carousel, like the Panthers sort of blew it up by trading up for Bryce, because like if the Panthers had stayed, I think that the quarterback carousel is such that like all 4 of these guys have landing spots pretty easily, right? Because the Cousins thing. So now you have Oakland, you have Minnesota, you have New England, Washington. And it's like, the Bears are making no bones about it. The Commanders are clear what they're going to do. You think the Patriots are clear? The Chargers and the Cardinals are in prime position to trade out in a deep draft. So I think a little bit different. But yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying. Like, you know, late March when somebody's odds are JJ McCarthy's like 2-1 to go 6th overall. Like, pump you that you could probably pump the brakes on.
But to answer Sully's question, I don't think McCarthy goes top 3.
Yeah, right. I think he goes top 5.
I can see that. Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, read between the lines next.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. I wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
All right, Roger Goodell did some talking. I mean, I'll tell you what, Roger Goodell, one of the primary reasons that guy keeps his job and gets his salary is his ability to, like, I mean, he is a word salad chef. Like, you ask him an important question, he will plow through a bunch of meaningless words until he's like, all right, let's get to the planted question about the ratings from whatever NFL media employee is here in the audience. We did get to hear him talk, though. Let's play Read Between the Lines. We'll start with Tom Brady, Sully, and the Las Vegas Raiders. Roger Goodell said, I wouldn't say the ownership process hadn't been finalized. He said, I wouldn't say it's a delay. It's a very thorough process regarding all ownership transfers. We're just going through that process. We've been in tough with their side, and I feel it's making progress. Again, like, literally nothing, Sully. Read Between the Lines on Roger Goodell talking Tom Brady and the Raiders.
I think it's just one of these situations where it's at a standstill and it's a basic non-answer. And when I say standstill, just kind of a longer process, because Breach, I'm pretty sure you wrote about this too. Like, wasn't it that he was basically getting it at a great deal and it was under market value of what he'd be getting into? So that's probably why NFL owners are a little bit apprehensive, to say the least, about him possibly jumping on as a minority owner of the Raiders.
Yeah, and he was getting a super discount. He was getting a Walmart-level discount that only the Broncos should be able to give because they're owned by the Walmart guy. And I think that you had the other owners just kind of raising their eyebrow and saying, hey, you're kind of torpedoing the value of every team if you start selling at this discount rate, and we can't have that happen. But I think the interesting thing, and so Brady kind of initially agreed to this in May 2023, and we're still here talking about it. Right before Valentine's Day, Super Bowl Sunday, NFL media reported that Tom Brady is now back on track to become a Raiders minority owner. And so the thought was that this would get approved at this round, at the annual league meeting. It did not. So it is interesting that there's another delay. Maybe they just want to see, hey, look, you guys, the price was 10% of what we wanted. You need to keep knocking that up, and we're not going to approve this until it gets to a number that everyone is on board with. And that's what it feels like. And I do think the other interesting thing here is the Fox thing. Look, they can say publicly it doesn't matter, but if Tom Brady is calling your game, he goes into your locker room, he's talking to your guys about personnel, he's talking to your guys about strategy, he's talking to the head coach. That would worry me a little bit if I'm an owner approving him as an owner. So I don't think this is as cut and dry as it maybe sounded a month ago.
Right. I was just going to say, no, real quick, Brinson, is that, yes, I think it has more to do with television than it does. Like, I know that some people will automatically be like, well, he could come back, he could quarterback for the team. I think it has much more to do with broadcasting and financial value of a franchise than it does any possibility of him coming back to play. I don't think that's really in the cards.
I mean, I would be annoyed as hell if I was an NFL owner and it's like, Hey, cool, Tom. Like, you were great for the league for forever. You cost us multiple Super Bowls, except for your boy Bobby Kraft over there. It's like we didn't win a lot because of you. And you're telling me you're going to come in here and take like a massive discount, and you're going to broadcast these games where I don't know. I don't think that I hadn't even really thought about the broadcast angle, but I think it's a fantastic point. I mean, you should not be able to broadcast NFL games for a network and be a minority NFL owner. I mean, if you're the Chiefs or the Chargers or the Broncos and Tom Brady is calling your game, do you think Sean Payton, Andy Reid, and Jim Harbaugh are paranoid about Tom Brady stealing secrets from them? Yeah, they are. why wouldn't they be? So yeah, that's a good call. I mean, I think you got to, and I mean, Tom Brady's definitely going to take this broadcasting job. It also seems like I'm starting to come around to the idea that Tom Brady would be pretty good at it, just because he's good at everything and he's had so much time to practice. And I think he kicked the can down the road basically for a year to do like covert broadcasting, like training camp. And it sucks because Greg Olsen was awesome, I thought. But, you know, Brady typically isn't bad at what he does.
Yeah, I liked Greg Olsen a lot.
I think it'll be worse than Greg Olsen. Don't get me wrong.
It'll be interesting to see him take on the role, but I think he's going to stink. I've always thought he was going to stink
the entire time, but yeah. Now that like he took an entire year to practice,
is it him and Burkhardt just in the booth like every day just grinding? Like I don't think that's happening.
Probably not.
Like I think it's going to be very interesting to see him be critical of any one of these players. You know, I just think of Patrick Mahomes. Like if he's doing a Patrick Mahomes game, I would be very shocked to see him be extremely critical of some of these throws or anything, any type of those decisions, maybe not taking a timeout. Just anything, hearing Brady be critical is something I've never really heard.
He started to do it with the podcast a little bit where he's like, the game is just crap now. It's like, you played 2 years ago.
But that's macro. Like, that's a very, like, back in my day, kids, we would do this. I'm talking about, that's a bad throw by Patrick Mahomes. He shouldn't have done this. It just that type of thing. I haven't seen him do it. Yes, exactly.
I mean, the one thing about that, though, is that I feel like Tom Brady is the one guy who can be critical and not worry about the blowback. He's got 7 Super Bowls on his resume. Yeah. Whereas if you're Greg Olsen, and no offense to Greg Olsen, but if you're critical, players might say, well, okay, but what did you do? Where's your Super Bowl ring, man? Like, why are we taking criticisms from you? So I feel like Brady almost has this impunity because he's Tom Brady. So I do feel like if someone can do it,
not impunity,
it's Brady. It's still Brady.
All right, next up, reading between the lines. Talk about the Eagles. They are playing a game in Brazil to kick off the season. I mean, the NFL is just like the greediest. It's good for us because it keeps us employed and all that, but it's just such a greedy organization. They are playing in Brazil. It's only on Peacock. Of course it is. My God, stop shoving Peacock down our... You know what? I'm not going to finish that sentence. Goodell addressed the international game saying, it's a market that we think will be an explosive market for us. We think this type of event will continue that growth factor and actually accelerate it. I skipped an entire read between the lines. I'm sorry, Harry. That's my bad. But great, great.
We can do it last, Brent. We'll just rejuggle the order.
Yeah, we'll flip it. Yeah. Read between the lines, Breach.
Well, I think that what Roger Goodell is trying to say is that he promised a few years ago that the NFL would eventually make $25 billion. He milked the cow for all it's worth on this side of the world. Now it's time. You got to stretch out. You got to go into other countries and you got to get new fans and you got to figure out new ways to bring in more money. And Brazil is a pretty gigantic untapped market. So I think that it's going to be huge there. I think that the game is going to sell out. Tickets are going to be hot. And the NFL is going to have millions of new fans for bringing this game down there in week 1 with the Eagles playing on Peacock.
Yeah, I'm all for growing football, growing the NFL, because as you mentioned, Brinson, that only helps us, right? Like that's money in our pockets. But I will say this, you know, when we start to go into these different markets and we're putting these marquee games on, I mean, this is an initial game right out of the gate in the NFL season. You're pigeonholing yourself in a couple of different ways when you sometimes go abroad, and then when you go a step further and put it on a streaming service, you're just really limiting the amount of people that can watch this. This is fine because the time change isn't too bad for a lot of things. But like, if you do what MLB did to start this season and you're playing in Seoul and these games are starting at 6 a.m. and it's the Dodgers and it's the Padres and you're relatively excited to see Shohei Ohtani in a Dodgers uniform, you have to wake up at like 5 in the morning East Coast time. That's, you got to be very careful if you're starting to do these international games in terms of time zones. But overall, this is going to help the game immensely.
Yeah. And look, I mean, whatever. Like Christmas, Brazil. Yeah. You know what my biggest takeaway here is? Mark Cuban needs an Old Takes, like an Old Takes Exposed account just for Mark Cuban, who like 15 years ago said, like, cows get, or what is it, pigs get fed and hogs get slaughtered. He's like, the NFL's gonna be dead in a couple of years. It's like, maybe you should have said that, Mark, because now Christmas is coming, pal. Like Roger Goodell's like, oh, Mark, you think that's funny? Well, Christmas is mine now.
Yeah, he's a who in Whoville.
And real quick on this game, Mark Murphy, Packers president, said that the Eagles either be playing the Packers or the Browns. It'll be one of those two teams playing in Brazil. So Cleveland fans, you might be taking the dog pound to South America. We might see the Cheeseheads in South America. We don't know which one it is, but I think he or Goodell said that the decision is supposed to be made at some point in the next week. So we should know soon who the Eagles opponent will be. And also, it's interesting this game is on a Friday night because that's generally kind of your lowest TV rated night. And so maybe that's why they're putting it on streaming, because it's not so much about the numbers. Mm. It's about playing a game in Brazil and just kind of get that out of the way and then, you know, figure things out after that.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was looking, I know nobody cares about NC State, but I was looking at the ratings for Carolina and Michigan State. Obviously, Carolina and Michigan State, a bigger game than NC State and Oakland. But Carolina kind of blew out Michigan State. It wasn't a great game. Ratings were for Carolina and Michigan State were much higher than NC State, Oakland. And part of that is just because it's Saturday night and people, like, you might be watching in a bar somewhere, or, you know, you're like checking on your phone and you're not actually watching the game. And I think that that's a great point, Breach, is the NFL on a Friday night knows there's a chance that the ratings aren't up to snuff for, you know, like the Amazon Prime game or the Prime Day or Black Friday game during the day on a Friday on like a, you know, the day after a holiday, like it was going to do monster ratings. Like everybody, you know, everybody's at home. The parents know how to get to Amazon Prime because the kids are there. Like that was always going to do big ratings. Friday night, early in the season, maybe not so much. So it's a very interesting point. Speaking of the Eagles, Goodell also mentioned the Falcons and Eagles tampering discussions. The Falcons, of course, being accused of tampering with Kirk Cousins, or they're investigating whether they tampered with Kirk Cousins, and the Eagles, if they tampered with Saquon Barkley. Goodell said, quote, "I usually don't give an update until it's concluded. I'm sure they're making progress. They were hard at work at it immediately," end quote. "I usually don't give an update until it's done." It's like, you tell me, Roger, you haven't gotten anything from the investigators at all? Like, hey, we've started. Here's where we're at. Like, I mean, you got no update whatsoever before the owners' meetings. You're telling me you have no information about this investigation when you spoke to the 32 NFL owners who you work for? Sure, Roger, that makes total sense. Why would you have no update whatsoever from the league investigators? Total sense, Breach.
I mean, like you said, he's the master of the word salad, and he's perfected it, and that's why he has been a pretty good commissioner. I will say, though, you know, we talked a little bit about this when it happens, but I wouldn't be surprised if the NFL, drops the hammer, but like drops the screwdriver on the Falcons, because you just have Kirk Cousins literally admitting to it. I don't see how they cannot not get punished. And so I feel like if you make an example of them, maybe dock them a third round pick or whatever, then teams will cut down on the chatter that comes before the tampering period. Because NFL is saying, look, we already gave you a tampering period. We're not going to open up pre-tampering on Saturday and Sunday, the weekend before free agency starts. So we need you guys to at least follow the rules. And the way you do that is by punishing teams that break them. I think it'll be a little tougher with the Eagles just because that's kind of a he said with Saquon and Howie Roseman and Penn State
and his college coach
James Franklin, right? So that one's a little more different, but you have Kirk Cousins admitting to it, so I don't know how you get out of not punishing the Falcons.
Breach, I'll just say this, though. You say that they might not do a pre-tampering period thing, but I don't know. If you can make that a marquee event, again, we were just going over
that's right.
You never know. But I do think – you're right, Brinson. Like, if the Maras go up to Roger Goodell and be like, hey, so what was the deal with that, with our star running back, Saquon Barkley, immediately going to our division rival? I don't know. I haven't looked into it yet. Like,
I don't provide updates until they're done. Right? It's like, sure, you guys pay me my $40 million a year bonus, but I mean, like, I'm not going to give you an update about what the investigation. It's like, you know, somebody updated you before you went to this meeting. Like, and you got an update on these things. Like, it's like, he's like, I'm sure they probably started. I don't know. Who knows? You know exactly where they're at in the investigation, Roger. Just tell us. Have they started? Have they done? Have they talked to anybody? I mean, it's ridiculous.
Also, right. they're hard at work immediately. Like you said, Breach, both players basically had already admitted to it publicly during press conferences.
Yeah. And it's like Florio's reporting that, you know, Cousins' wife is down in Atlanta checking out schools like 2 weeks before tampering period even begins. Like, oh yeah, of course he's talked to people.
Well, I will say with Saquon, though, he actually went on the New Heights podcast with Travis and Jason Kelce on Wednesday, March 27th. And he said he was actually texting with CJ Stroud, and his first instinct was to sign with the Texans. He's allowed to, you know, the players can recruit each other. He can't, talk with the coaching staff or the general manager or anybody in Houston. And he's like, yeah, that's kind of, I thought where I was going to end up. And then he said the Eagles called on Monday. So he, you know, he stuck to that part of the story and was saying, smart. So he's trying to make sure the Eagles don't get in trouble.
Saquon's done a good job sort of walking this back. I feel like the Falcons are like, so like cocky after signing, Kirk Cousins are like, whatever, like, dude, we went and got Cousins. Like, we
we're
got
in the Super Bowl. We don't care.
Yeah. I like the vibe. It's a good vibe. Good. Yeah. Like, by all means, be cocky, be confident, you know, go win some football games. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, there's news and notes from around the league to get into, some big signings, and maybe a little prediction about where Dak Prescott might land after this season. Next!
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
All right. There's a report from Ian Rappaport of NFL Media that Dak Prescott and the Cowboys have, quote, a mutual understanding of his contract situation, with no offers from Dallas, despite him being in a contract year, end quote. Pretty wild to think about Dak Prescott, who's – I'm trying to think how this works. He can't be tagged again, can he? Can he be tagged again?
No.
Like, there's a no-tag clause in his contract, right?
Yes.
So he cannot be – he can't be tagged at all. It's like not even – like it's not even like it would be difficult to tag him. He can't be tagged.
Yes, no tag clause, no trade clause.
So the Cowboys are kind of up against it here. They're not going to give Dak a new contract. They're going to let him go out and earn it. And, man, if he plays like he played last year, Dak Prescott is going to get $55 million from the open market. Or I don't know. It's a weird situation. So let's let's predict where Dak will play next. This Dak landing spot segment brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. Breach, where do you think Dak Prescott lands?
All right. So first, let me say that I do think he stays with the Cowboys, which is boring. So I'm going to spice things up. I know that sounds crazy. I just think that Jerry Jones is having this weird offseason where he says they're all in. They don't do anything in free agency. We're not going to deal with Dak. He's just saying things to say things. I don't
He's
even think
scribbling nonsense on a pad at the owners
yes.
meeting.
Exactly. Exactly. But I think the juiciest landing spot would be the New York Giants. Just think if they let him walk. The Giants need a quarterback right now. Maybe they draft one this year, but maybe they don't. Maybe no one falls in their lap and they say, all right, we'll just roll with Daniel Jones for one more season and we'll find someone in free agency next year. And if Dak Prescott goes to an NFC East rival and beats the Cowboys, Jerry Jones will instantly become the laughingstock of the NFL. I mean, that would be the worst possible thing that could happen to the Cowboys. So I like that as my super juicy landing spot, the New York Giants.
That is spicy. I do tend to agree with you that he will ultimately end up back with the Cowboys. There's this weird, like, it's this like confidence that kind of works out for Dallas where it's like, you're the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. It's like it's one of the five most famous jobs in America. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of people in the country who could name have a better chance of naming the Cowboys quarterback than naming the actual president of the United States of America. Sleepy Dak. I actually had a travel issue thanks to old Joe recently, which made me very happy. Major delays. Anyway, I digress. Just a comment. I think that if he ended up going somewhere else, I'll say the Denver Broncos. And the reason why I think you weren't going Broncos, right, Sully?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so. Just make sure. I think you could make a really good case that Dak Prescott's skill set and Sean Payton's offense would go hand in hand, like to a freaking T. And again, I think he stays with the Cowboys, but I think the Broncos would be a really interesting option, especially if they just eat this cap. They eat this monster hit from Russ, and then you go and sign a guy like Dak Prescott, who is bigger, stronger, taller, faster, and really accurate, throws a great deep ball. You protect him and give him some weapons, and he can light it up. I really like that fit.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, again, quarterback needy team that's kind of maybe on the outside looking in of being able to draft a quarterback this year. Right. Wouldn't surprise me at all. I just think that it's wild that Dallas is basically putting their head coach and their starting quarterback in a lame duck year. It is very much a prove it.
I guess they are all in.
if this doesn't go well, I think Jerry's hitting the reset button, going new coach, new quarterback, and it's all done. Now,
maybe that's what he meant by all in.
It's like we have to be all in, and then in quotations, or else, like maybe yeah. That's possible. For me, I would go with the Seattle Seahawks. I think that is a very interesting team to put him in the NFC West. And we're assuming, obviously, they play out this year and he leaves in free agency and that's where they go sign. Geno Smith, that would correlate pretty well with his contract. I think they could clear like $25 million right out of the gate by moving on from him after this season. Couldn't do it this season. But if all of a sudden he kind of takes a step back in 2024, this isn't a roster that's you want to rebuild with. I mean, they have DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Jackson Smith, and Jigba. They have deep players on defense that really could contend with stable quarterback play. You just pick and drop Dak Prescott in there, I think that they'd be competitive.
Yeah. Monster cap it, by the way. Or monster cap relief. For the Geno Smith contract, the restructuring, if they cut him, they would save $25 million in cap space versus a $38.5 million cap hit. So that actually does line up pretty nicely. All right, this Dak landing spot segment has been brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. Panthers signed Jadeveon Clowney. Trade away Brian Burns. Get a second round pick. I'm starting to like what the Panthers have done this offseason. Outside of the actual return for Brian Burns, which I don't think is necessarily grounded in this offseason. It's grounded in the rumors, which the Panthers have not bothered to try to refute through leaking out anything, and they could have easily done it. The rumors that the Rams offered 2 first-round picks, like, that's been corroborated by every, like, insider. You hear it all over the place. And at no point have the Panthers said, hey, like that never happened, or like leaked it to anybody, like, oh, like that was contingent on blah, blah, blah. So, like, I think when you take that into account, and then you take what they got from back for Burns into account, then it's easy to rip them. But I think generally speaking, now granted, they've lost a lot of people. I think their defense will be substantially worse than it was last year. But Clowney's going to help that. And, you know, they get the interior offensive lineman. I don't know. I like what the Panthers have done. It's been a sort of frugal, not semi-splashy, but not really, kind of like, all right, we got to sort of, we don't have our first round pick because we gave it up for Bryce Young. The freaking Bears are taking Caleb Williams 1 overall. We're idiots. We've made our bed. We have to lie in this bed. Sure, it's covered in fleas, and, you know, it's like there's no sheets, and it's really, there's no mattress, and it's, you know, it's miserable, but we have to lie here for at least a year. Let's see what we can do to make it better. Maybe spruce it up. You bring in 2 interior offensive linemen. I think they've done a decent job. And I think Clowney, hometown guy, should play well in front of the family and stuff. I think it kind of makes sense.
I think the Clowney thing's interesting. Yeah. Obviously, they've been getting killed for the Brian Burns situation. I agree with you that I do like the interior lineman signings. Whatever you can do, as I've said before, to help Bryce Young take a step and get everything back on track in year two, I don't care what the record is, as long as that helps. But they have been getting killed, and what better way to give yourself good press is to then fill a need with somebody that you obviously lost in Brian Burns, with a dude who's beloved in the home area. I mean, like, that couldn't have been in any better type of headline the Carolina Panthers could have had, to bring back, like, one of the best Gamecocks of all time, number 7 retired, like, all that. Like, I mean, that's an easy win for them.
Yeah, and I think if you're Clowney, you're thrilled with this too. You grew up 30 miles away from Charlotte. And look, if he's been pretty good the last few seasons. He's hit at least 9 sacks in 2 of his past 3 seasons. And like Brinson said, the Panthers have just been quietly making smart moves. It almost feels like the Texans last year, when you go back and assess everything they did in the offseason, you're like, wow, that really wasn't that bad. We were hating on them for the Brian Burns trade, but now that we see everything that's happened, it's just, okay, they're in the NFC South. That's a division where anybody can compete. And if Bryce Young just plays slightly above average football, they might be able to compete in that division.
Yeah, and I think there's a really good chance that they go out and get a wide receiver with one of these 2 second-round picks. I said, I was on radio with my buddy Adam Gold in Raleigh on Thursday, and I think it'll be really interesting to see what they do with those 2 second-round picks. I'm starting to think that there's actually a reasonable chance that David Tepper does not have his hand on the wheel at the moment, or that Mrs. Tepper doesn't have her hand. Like, that the Teppers have their hands off the wheel. They're letting Dan Morgan, you know, drive the car. And if they're doing that, that's a really good sign if you're a Panthers fan. The one thing I would watch out for is in the draft, if there's a run on wide receivers, which they clearly need, and then the Panthers suddenly give up 2 second-round picks for a late first, to try to move up, to move into the first, to grab whatever the back end of the wide receiver run. That's sort of what they did with Matt Corral a few years ago. We killed him for it. Panthers fans screamed at me. Hey, who was right there, guys? And so I would just keep an eye out for that. Rams signed Tre'Davious White, former first round pick, signing everywhere. I love this signing by the Rams. Obviously, injuries, dealt with injuries a ton, but this is a guy that is, yeah, when he plays well, Sully, you've seen him in that division. He's an elite quarterback, excuse me.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, how can he rebound after another season-ending injury? But, as you note, if they get Tre'Davious White, like the actual Tre'Davious White, I mean, I know that it's totally different, but you lose Aaron Donald, and if you can insert an all-pro corner into that defense, I mean, that is, in a kind of a roundabout way, quite the way to land on your feet.
Yeah, and I think if you're the Rams, this is low risk, high reward. You're only paying $8.5 million. If Tre'Davious White is anywhere near the all-pro level that he has been earlier in his career, then you got a shutdown defensive player for cheap. And if he's not, then you say, all right, well, we only signed up for 1 year, and we'll give him the boot after the season. So I think this is a good move for the Rams.
Yeah, I mean, hard to complain about. It's pretty low risk, high reward. The so the NFL changed the kickoff rule, as we mentioned earlier in the show. And like within, like almost immediately, the Pittsburgh Steelers go out and sign Arthur Smith's BFF, Cordarrelle Patterson, former all-pro return man, erstwhile running back, wide receiver who destroyed an NC State football season in the span of like 15 minutes back in 2012. We were like top 15 in the country. Played Tennessee down the Chick-fil-A game, and it's like Cordarrelle Patterson had transferred in. Nobody knew who the hell he was. Also, he went for like three touchdowns in the first half, and we're just, it's like, well, David Amerson's career is cooked. Amerson was like coming into the season as like a top five pick, and he like went to fell to the third round or fifth round or whatever it was. Anyway, drink. What was more interesting about this? The actual signing, Sully, or CBS Sports NFL insider Jonathan Jones tweeting out, arguably the greatest return man in history, as if Devin Hester didn't just get inducted into the Hall of Fame. JJ, come on, bro.
I also love that he responded to his own tweet and says, yes, I know that Devin Hester exists.
Yeah, he's like, look, I screwed up, all right? Devin, I know who Devin Hester is.
I mean,
Cordarrelle Patterson doesn't have an argument over Devin Hester, right? Like, love Patterson.
No, great player, but no, it's, I don't think it's particularly
close. Like,
Hester
just got inducted to the Hall of Fame, dude.
Right. I don't know if Patterson will even have that type of buzz to even, you know, have that conversation, but neither here nor there.
JJ has his way, he will.
That's true. You never know. He'll be the one, you know, just really campaigning for him. Again, almost like reverse. Cold take himself. Like
you just lead into it. Yeah.
But I think that this is, you know, obviously a good move for them on a couple of different fronts. Obviously they're changing the rules. I guess the biggest question is, you know, he's one of the best kick returners of his recent generation, but I don't know. Does it still factor in with these new rules? Like, right. Yes. Okay. Under the old parameters. Sure. Yeah. No, great special teams returner to bring in, but is his skill set, is where he is at in his career, is that conducive to these new rules? We just simply don't know yet.
Yeah, Breach, well, I want to ask you about that because, yeah, like, I was sort of thinking, you watch the video of the way the new kickoff works, and you almost kind of feel like an Austin Ekeler type would be better back there. Someone who's like you get kind of behind these blockers and just like can like really quick, like short and quick and speedy and bursty. Patterson is explosive and fast, but he's sort of more of a glider and like a kind of get like downhill and sort of fly through dudes versus, I don't know.
First I'm going to defend JJ real quick because Cordarrelle Patterson does hold the NFL record for most kickoff return touchdowns. And maybe JJ was saying he's the best kickoff returner of all time.
So what's different than punt return?
Yeah. It's like, how much did JJ pay you for this? But you got to include, if you include punts, then Hester's the guy, I guess.
Well, right. But Patterson didn't return punts, or he's not really considered. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah.
Right. But if you were only judging on kickoff returns alone, you could certainly put Patterson in the argument. So I think it will be interesting to see what kind of returners are back there, because like you said, it would almost make sense for an Austin Ekeler type or a Christian McCaffrey type. Like if you're the 49ers in the Super Bowl, I think Christian McCaffrey is your returner in a big game like that, because you know, he's got vision. Any running back with great field vision who can kind of juke through defenders would be good. But the flip side of that is you still do have the open field element to it. Right away, right when you initially get the ball, you want someone who can kind of take off in the first 10 or 15 yards because the coverage team isn't going to be there yet. And that's kind of where Cordarrelle Patterson thrives. So I do think, and he plays running back, so he's kind of the perfect dual threat guy to do this. So I do think this is a smart signing by the Steelers, but it will be interesting to see what teams do and if they put running backs back there in big games or, I mean, McCaffrey's a great example of once you get to the playoffs, are you putting your $15 million running back returning kicks because you know how big it is in important situations.
Can, with this new kick format, can you still like do a thing where you like lateral and then, like the throwback return? Is that like a viable?
You can have two returners back there. So that's still in play. Mm-hmm. And I mean, honestly, you could have someone come off the line and like come back for reverse if you wanted to, but it could only happen after the initial returner catches the ball. So, I mean, there's still funky stuff that can happen.
And I'm correct. You can pull, I mean, you have to stay, you know, 5-5 on the 35, but you can also pull after they land in the landing zone, right?
Right. As soon as the landing, as soon as the ball hits the ground, or as soon as the returner touches it, the guys on the line, on the restraining line, as the NFL refers to it, can move and do crazy things like that.
Be interesting.
All right, I'm kind of sold on this. Like, it's ridiculous. They're just throwing it out there and like letting us figure it out. But I mean, and like the whole concept is absurd. But like, I'm kind of for make it, give me jock jams, baby. I don't care. Like, let's get weird with the NFL. All right, finally, Hard Knocks, popular show. They are changing up how they do the in-season Hard Knocks. This is not the preseason Hard Knocks, right, Breach? This is the in-season Hard Knocks, right?
In-season Hard Knocks, correct.
In-season Hard Knocks, which is a thing that I'm sure people have watched. I haven't really watched it. You guys watched in-season Hard Knocks?
I saw a few episodes of the Dolphins last year. Yeah.
Was that last year, the first year with the Dolphins?
Or am I right? I thought the first
there's been 3 years. There's been the Colts, the Cardinals, and the Dolphins.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not, I don't know, man. It's like, if I'm taking, like, I watch Inside the NFL, or used to before it switched to the CW. It's like, usually I'm going to consume like some Netflix or something like during the season. That's just sort of my vibes. But I'm intrigued by this reformatting of in-season Hard Knocks because, Sully, it is not going to be about a single team, instead about an entire division. What do you think about that? And what would be your choice for best division in 2024 to cover?
I think it probably makes it a little bit more palatable for the teams that are actually being covered. Like, I'm sure you're still going to get a lot of, you know, cameramen and all these people running through your locker room, and you're going to hate it regardless. But I do think that because they're covering four teams, it maybe makes for a little less invasive atmosphere. Again, probably just by a little bit, and any head coach is going to hate even just a little bit of invasiveness. But still, I do think that that's what at least HBO is trying to do, is curb all of these teams just saying, I hate being in this. It's such an annoyance. No pun intended. So I think that's probably why they're trying to do it. And also, I do think
It's Max now, please.
Right. Oh, sorry, Max. Excuse me.
But also, did you really not mean that curb joke with HBO?
I did. I actually just pulled that out of nowhere. So hey, maybe that's just somewhere back there.
Well, it made me enthusiastic.
I'll tell good. I'm glad. But in terms of the division, I should say that I would probably target, if I were Max, it would be the NFC North. I think that division has so much intrigue this upcoming season, all across the board. Chicago starting over with Caleb Williams. How's he doing during his rookie year? Number one overall pick. Obviously, they've revamped a lot of what they've done. Green Bay, storied franchise. They had a pop year in 2023. How's Jordan Love doing? How's Matt LaFleur doing? You go to Detroit, clearly the team of the darling last year. They're trying to get to a Super Bowl. And then you have the Minnesota Vikings trying to figure it out post Kirk Cousins. Who knows? Maybe there's a top five draft pick there as well. So I think there's a lot of storylines that you could watch, and it ranges from a team that could be bringing in a young quarterback to two possible playoff teams in the Packers and the Lions. I think that'd be fascinating.
I like it, Solly.
Yeah, it's a good argument for the NFC North, for sure.
I, though, if I was the producer of Hard Knocks, would pick, I'm sure
it will surprise us,
a Northern division, but not the NFC North. I would take the AFC North. For me, look, you start with the Steelers. Either you have Russell Wilson maybe reviving his career in Pittsburgh, or you have a QB controversy by the time this kicks off in November. If they stick the same timeline, you have Justin Fields maybe itching to get in there and start if Russell Wilson doesn't get things turned around. You have whatever the heck's going on at quarterback in Cleveland with Deshaun Watson trying to prove he's deserving of his contract, even though the Browns are out there signing every quarterback they can get their hands on, with Jameis Winston and Tyler Huntley, and they still have Dorian Thompson-Robinson. So you're talking about four quarterbacks on the roster for whatever reason. The Bengals, obviously, Joe Burrow coming off the wrist injury. That is going to be a story if he's struggling to start the season. And then, of course, the Baltimore Ravens. So
I think you always forget the fourth team,
the AFC North. Well, they're the only team that doesn't have like a crazy situation.
I mean, you got like Lamar. The Ravens are always intriguing.
Yeah. They could be the number one seed for all we know. You know what I mean? They could be in that conversation. I will say, Breach, anytime we can get more Jameis Winston on TV, I'm in.
That's a good point. So By the way, I would say what would be the least, the team you would least like to see on I think it's part of the division. It's like, I think it's probably the AFC East. Maybe the NFC South.
I was gonna say NFC South, probably.
AFC South. I'm just saying, like, I don't need any more Jets in my life.
Right, right.
The Dolphins are kind of intriguing, I guess, but I'll take all the might be Daniel I can get.
Patriots with the new coaching staff could be fascinating. The Bills, yeah, could be fun. So I feel like it's the NFC South has got to be an answer, right?
Yeah, I think that's the answer.
NFC South is probably the answer. I had to decide. I was deciding between two. The NFC East was my initial thought because you have these revenge running. You have like Saquon Barkley playing the Giants twice. You have the whole Dak situation that we talked about. Philadelphia is always spicy. You know, the Commanders' new coaching staff. And I was just like, I'm so sick. I just, NFC East has just been just beaten down, our, like, just constantly in our faces just for like the last 30 years. And I don't need like a whole division thing about it. So instead, I'm going to go with the AFC West.
Ooh.
And the reason this is coach driven. I mean, Antonio Pierce is a fascinating guy to have like a camera on constantly, and he's the least fascinating coach in the entire division. You have the two-time Super Bowl, like back-to-back champion Andy Reid, the Chiefs going for a three-peat. You have the Taylor Swift factor, by the way. Like, maybe they break up on Max. I mean, who knows? I mean, that's how you really drive the ratings. I mean, it's insane. Like the number of times this offseason and like and throughout the season too. But like, I would have a people ask me about the NFL. Maybe they get engaged on Max. There you go, Harry. People ask me about the NFL, like friends' wives, or like one of my buddies' wife texted me and was like, "Can you get, like, our daughter wants to know if you can get Taylor Swift's autograph at the Super Bowl?" It's like, no, but that's awesome. Like the level of interest that Max could get by having Travis Kelce on this program is insane, and that doesn't even get to Sean Payton and Jim Harbaugh. Like Jim Harbaugh in his first year with the Chargers, I mean, just incredible theater. He's a maniac. He doesn't mind being on television. And I think Sean Payton would probably prefer not to be on one of these things, but he also is an egomaniac. I mean, everybody, you know, they're all egomaniacs, but like they love to hear themselves talk. They love to, you know, be seen as like, you know, change it, turning things around. Like Sean Payton can use the entire series to kick Russ under the bus. I mean, I love this idea of the AFC West.
Coaches, yeah.
Yeah, you would have the, you know, you're not even talking about the quarterbacks, too.
Mahomes, I mean, like, and Herbert, and like Mahomes, maybe Herbert, quarterback,
whatever,
in Denver or Oakland or Las Vegas.
Whatever these other teams are going to do at quarterback, like I was saying earlier, you could conceivably have top 10 quarterbacks in that conversation as well. So you'd have like both ends of the spectrum. I think it'd be great.
Yeah.
Jim Harbaugh alone, just give him his own show.
I would watch an entire show just following the Harbaugh brothers around.
One thing real quick, the preseason version of Hard Knocks, they changed the criteria slightly.
Oh, they did?
It used to be if you had been in the playoffs in any of the past two seasons, you didn't have to be on the show. You could. That's not a rule anymore.
Oh, they got rid of that?
That is not a rule. Now the rule is if you are participating in the in-season Hard Knocks show, obviously you don't have to be on the preseason one. And if you are scheduled to be on the following season, in-season Hard Knocks show. So I'm guessing they're going to be planning these at least 2 years in advance. You don't.
So the NFL just said, like, all right, everybody, you're done opting out because you fired your coach or because.
No, the first year head coach rule is still in place.
Okay.
That's still in place. And then the third rule was if you have been on Hard Knocks in the past 10 years, you do not have to be on the show. That has now been cut down to 8 years. So but the playoff rules out, the only teams that do not have to do it are first year head coaches, but that only applies to preseason Hard Knocks.
Well, I mean, and look, frankly, that makes sense if you're going to keep doing this because, like, you know, you basically knock out, like, half the league.
There's only three options last year, and no one wanted to do it.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. No one, and the Jets were you're doing this. you're always dragging attention into his own house. You're doing this. You're getting the attention. All right. That'll do it for us. Great show, as always. Big weekend coming up. I hope that when I see you guys on Monday, I am violently hungover, and that NC State is headed to the Final Four. I won't feel bad. Don't worry.
Brinson, how much money should I bet on NC State to beat Marquette? Like everything?
I would bet.
Show me some confidence, man.
I would either bet $74 or $83.
Okay.
I am fully anticipating it being a scene from Good Will Hunting where Breach and I are Ben Affleck and walk up to the door, knock on the door to wait for you to come in, and you're just not home. You're gone somewhere else. Had to go see about a girl, had to go see about an NC State Final Four team. I think that that's probably the most likely scenario out of all.
I hope that is a scenario. I mean, I'll just say this. If we win on Friday night, that means we're playing on Sunday night or Sunday afternoon. I mean, I'm just full warning for Monday's show. It's going to be, it might be must-see television regardless. All right, that's it for us. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, tell your friends about it. For Sully, for Breach, I'm Rinsen. We'll see you guys later.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.